This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Hour number two of Bob, Groz, and Tom. Oh, this is going to be fun. We get a chance to talk with one of our favorites from ESPN.com. He's down there in Houston covering that series. David Schoenfeld joins us here on the Venue Kings Hotline. David, how you doing today?
I'm good. How are you two doing?
Doing good. Enjoying the I'm enjoying the noise around the playoffs. The games are getting there, but now you've got spying going on in your series. You've got claims of dirty play going on in the other series. Business is picking up, as I like to say.
Yeah, quite a day yesterday, right. We had a grand slam. We had a 13-inning game that used 16 pitchers. We had Manny Machado calling himself or referring to himself and saying, I'm not Johnny Hustle. Then he scores a winning run. He spikes the first baseman. Yeah, a lot of stuff besides actually what's going on between the lines that happened yesterday. So who knows what's going to happen today.
Now, what was your reaction when you saw this story that came down about the Astros and whatever this uncredentialed person was doing? He was in the wrong place by the Red Sox dugout. What's your reaction when you read a story like that?
Well, and I know MLB just issued a statement saying this guy was only monitoring the Red Sox dugout to make sure they weren't cheating. So, who do I guess my reaction is MLB has to figure out a way to crack down on this. With all the technology we have, you know, I don't know, relying on the teams to sort of police themselves, that's not a solution. We've seen this too often in other sports with the Patriots and so on. So I think you got to start thinking about, you know, severe punishment if a team gets caught. Maybe they aren't allowed to draft for an entire year. I don't know. If they get caught.
Just stealing signs? Because we were talking before, what else would they be stealing in terms of information if it's not just signs?
Yeah, I think it's mostly stealing signs, right? You know, Yeah, I guess if you're from the angle, whether you can see the catcher, obviously, you know, the Red Sox got caught last year using Apple watches and to somehow relay the signs to the dugout. The technology is there to make it easier rather than just the old-fashioned way when you sat somebody out in the center field bleachers and gave them a pair of binoculars, right?
Right. Which...
So you got to crack down somehow. I mean, I've seen comments from players. There's been a ton of wild pitches and pass balls this year in the postseason, and part of that is because the catchers have to constantly change, you know, their sign, so they feel maybe they're getting crossed up sometimes. So I think baseball needs to find a way to crack down.
And do you think they will? And do you think it would ever get as serious as you talked about? Because, you know, those are two different questions, really, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, obviously baseball wants to deflect attention away from it right now, and they want us talking about the games. But I have to think at the winter meetings, at the GM meetings, they have to get all the teams on the same page. Knock it off. You know, let's stop it. Let's stop this.
The thing with Machado last night, kicking Aguilar, however you want to describe what happened there. Yep. We know in the last several years, certain rules have been amended. The collision rule at home plate, and it's mainly to keep the game safer, to protect your investment, as it were. We don't want these players getting hurt. But when did the toughness get taken out of baseball? Because there's a lot of fans. I'm one of them. I like seeing a guy slide into second and take out a shortstop. I like seeing the collisions. When did that mentality shift?
It slowly has been going in this direction, right? It really took a turn, I don't know, 2011 when Buster Posey got hurt, right? And missed almost the entire season. That's really when they started cracking down. And look, I'm all for a nice, clean, hard slide, but the slide we saw Chase Utley execute in the playoffs a couple years ago when he can't even touch the base and he's sliding 10 feet past second base, that's not baseball, and that's what they're trying to crack down on. But the Machado play, I don't think I would describe that as a tough play. I think that was a dirty play. You know, he went out of his way to kick Aguilar. To be fair, Aguilar was taking up too much of first base, but I think it was pretty clearly a dirty play by Machado.
It's something he's been accused of before, too, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, he had an incident earlier this year against Oakland. Last year, he took out Dustin Pedroia at second base on a, what I would say, a borderline dirty slide. Pedroia hasn't been the same since. I mean, Christian Yelich had some four-letter words tossed to Machado's way last night. So, yeah, his reputation within the game certainly isn't good.
Do you feel like watching the ALCS, I know that you're in there in Houston, and anything can happen in a baseball series, but do you feel like that's kind of the World Series, that that's the champion of that series is the best team?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I'm catching bits and pieces and watching the end of that Dodgers game, and I don't know how many times it ended up striking out, it does feel that way. And, you know, look, you had 108 wins and 103 wins. I think they were the two best teams in baseball, although the ALCS has been a very sloppy series. Yeah, Danny, anything can happen. I do feel like the two best teams in baseball are playing right now for the AL championship.
And how do you feel it's going to play out at this point? You got Game 4 coming up tonight, which is an interesting game to say that they all are at this point. Interesting pitching matchup coming up tonight. I mean, how do you see it playing out?
Yeah, it's tough to predict, Roz. I mean, Charlie Morton's going for Houston. He's thrown four innings in the last month. I don't think they have any idea what they're going to get from him. On the other hand, Chris Sale, we think, is going to go tomorrow in Game 5. We're not absolutely sure after he got sick and was in the hospital. You know, and his velocity was way down in Game 1. You know, and he had that shoulder issue during the season. So I don't know if the Red Sox know what they're going to get from him. So these next two games are completely unpredictable. I got to think we're heading back to Fenway, and hopefully 7 games. We've gone this far. At least give us a Game 7.
This way that Craig Counsell has been managing his pitching staff, the bullpen and the rotation, sort of as just one big entity, do you know what the origins of that are? Because this is even another step beyond what the Rays were doing.
Yeah, it's kind of a new tactic. And in part, the Dodgers have all these platoons, so he can start a righty and then go to a lefty or vice versa, but yeah, it's kind of a new thing, and, you know, so far it's worked. You know, the only way to make it work is you got to have 10 or 11, maybe 12 average or better pitchers. And no, the Brewers don't have a great rotation, but they, you know, their starters are okay. Their bullpen's very good. You're not going to do this if you have 3 good relievers, you know, so they can make it work because of that bullpen depth. And they can make it work because you have all these off days, you know, in the playoffs. It's not, I don't think it's a realistic strategy, you know, for 162, but for October, they might be able to make it work for you know, this series and one more.
David, the strikeouts are driving me crazy, man.
Are the time of games driving you crazy?
Yeah, that's not helping either.
I mean, I hate to be like, you know, the get off my lawn guy, but that Dodgers game last night was almost 4 hours for the first 9 innings, and it was 1-1.
Right.
You know, and I love baseball, but I think this is a legitimate issue. We know they have tried to speed it up. Nothing's worked. The games are slow. The strikeouts, they are absurd, you know. So, yeah, you know, I love the sport, but there are some real issues going on here with it.
Yeah, there are issues with strikeouts and then shifting and whatnot. Do you see baseball ever bother? Because look, I understand why it's done. I'm not the biggest Sabre guy, but I understand why it works, why they're doing it. I just don't believe it's made the game better. I think it's made the game less watchable. Do you see baseball ever stepping in and trying to do something? I'm not sure what it would be about it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. You know, Rob Manfred, you know, last year, I think it was, he brought up the idea of banning the shift. And, of course, the stat heads on Twitter went berserk. And, you know, I always point out other sports have rules on defense, right?
Yep.
No zone defense in the NBA, you know. Football obviously has a lot of rules on what you can't do on defense. So this idea that it's against the history of baseball to tell what you can do, I don't think that's the solution necessarily. I think eventually batters will have to adjust. But it's also, let's also give credit. These pitchers today, they're absolutely phenomenal. I mean, they're throwing 98 to 100, but these unhittable sliders and curveballs, you know, it's really hard to hit, you know, in 2018.
David, I was noticing the exact same thing last night. Some of these relievers, like Peralta, these guys that the Brewers are running out there, I mean, granted the approach at the plate isn't always the best if you're just swinging for the fences, but some of these pitches do absolutely look unhittable. I think it's those two things that are leading to the strikeouts, but it is tough to watch.
It can be tough to watch, and it's not easy to go, oh, let me just go up there and poke a ball to left field. Well, not everybody's Rod Crew or Tony Gwynn or Edgar Martinez, right? You don't do that. That's hard to do. You know, you are trying to hit the ball hard, and it's hard to make consistent contact against these pitchers. So, yeah, I don't know what you do. I mean,
lower the mound again?
Yeah, that's an option. You could lower the mound. You could, you know, I think you could maybe set limits on how relief pitchers could be deployed. Maybe they have to face three batters or something. So at least you don't get all the lefty-righty-lefty stuff in the middle of the game. But that's not going to have a huge impact. But, yeah, these are all legitimate issues that, you know, the sport's talking about.
Hypothetically, David, just for fun, just humor me on this one. If the Mariners were in one of these series, how do you think they would fare with the roster that they ended the season with?
Yeah, you know, you watch the talent on Boston and Houston. I know Seattle, what they end up with, 89 wins.
Yep.
It doesn't seem like they're that far off, but when you kind of really just look at the players, they're not on the level of these teams. You know, it's not even close. Just look at the superstars alone on Houston and Boston, you know. So, yeah, I don't know what the Mariners do, you know. Of course, then again, they had that series in Houston, right, where they won four in a row.
Right, yeah. Swept them.
Anything can happen, you know, in a seven-game series. But, you know, how could you not look at this series and think, well, the Mariners, they really have to find a way to add more talent. But I don't know how they're going to do that in the offseason.
David, have a great time tonight. Here's hoping for 2 7-game series and a 7-game World Series as well.
We've gone this far. Let's just play it out. I'm with you.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David.
All right, guys. You bet.
David Schoenfeld of ESPN and ESPN.com.
If it were the Mariners from May, Graz, we'll say pre-Cano suspension, so like beginning of May.
Come on.
In a series against the Astros, would they get swept?
You'd look at it, you know, my point would be you'd look at it man-to-man, both teams at their best. How many Mariners are you taking over the Astro counterpart?
Very, very few.
Edwin Diaz, maybe.
Yeah, I'll take the closer. A closer, edge Mariners. Pitching-wise, I'm not sure if I would take any Mariners starter over what they have.
No, I would not. First base?
I would think about Colome, by the way, just going back to the bullpen for a second.
Yeah, but the Astros,
Astros
have got a pretty good bullpen, too. I mean, they're not bereft of talent in there.
No. Catcher, no.
First base, no. Second base, Cano versus Altuve.
I'm taking Altuve.
Shortstop, if he's healthy, Correa. Sorry.
Definitely Correa. Who's their third base? Oh, Bregman. Although he's not really hitting, but he's walking a ton.
Yeah, but I mean, even if you just looked at him on paper, though. I mean,
oh, he's an all-star player.
He's
far better. The only other one that I'm looking at closely would be
DH.
Cruz with the DH. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, we could look at series and do that same matchup. I mean, I just talked about the Kirk Gibson home run game 30 years ago. In that series, the Oakland A's had a much better team.
They had a much better team on paper, and the Dodgers were still playing backups on top of the fact that even their starters weren't as good.
Right, right. So, I mean, it doesn't always work that way. Talent doesn't always well out in baseball. And as, you know, David mentioned, the 4-game sweep of the Astros. But, no, I kind of, when you watch see the lineups that those two American League teams are trotting out, and I'm surprised to hear David say, yeah, he thinks that's the real World Series because, I mean, in baseball, man, anything can happen in a short series.
When we say
flip of the coin,
when we say best team, I mean, look, when you're in a tournament in any sport, you're trying to figure out a champion, not the best team. So the best team thing doesn't even really matter, especially in baseball.
Especially in baseball, where a couple of hot pitchers can change it up. I'm, both games are interesting tonight. I'm much more interested in the Dodger Brewer game. It's going on. It's going to start in about an hour. Clayton Kershaw, Game 5.
Yeah,
I mean,
pivotal point in the series again.
Yeah, there's some question. I saw one of the stories on ESPN.com. Is this Kershaw's last game as a Dodger in L.A.? They're actually talking about that a little bit. I mean, this is a big, big game.
Last game as a Dodger in L.A. Oh, in L.A. Okay.
In L.A.,
because the series could end in Milwaukee if they lose it.
Just back to Milwaukee, right.
Right. Yeah, I saw after his last start somebody tweeted out, yeah, playoff Kershaw's back. I mean, look, I think he's done enough in the playoffs.
Well, it's still evolving, though. I mean, he's had success, but he's definitely not been. When you look at what he's done during the regular season,
mm-hmm.
he's not the same guy in the playoffs.
Now,
he can continue to evolve that perception. Here's a great example of it right here.
Yeah, he's been much better in recent years, but you're right. The last game certainly takes away from that.
You get a chance to add to it today. Odd number games are always the big games, just by rule of thumb in a seven-game series. Game 5, I mean. This feels that way, doesn't it?
Oh, certainly.
Like the winner of this one is gonna if the Brewers win, they go home with a 3-2 edge. No guarantees, but
if the Brewers win, they have a huge edge. If the Dodgers win, I'd say that it almost evens it because they know they have to go back to Milwaukee,
right.
And they just have to win one of two as opposed to both.
Yeah, it should be
right.
Good.
I mean, and yeah,
should be a real good one.
The case of any, it's interesting you bring up Kershaw, because the case of any superstar player in any sport who is dominant in the regular season but who can't win in the postseason, because he hasn't won a championship yet.
Right.
Right. That's always an interesting one when we talk about legacy. It looked like for a while that's where Peyton Manning's career was going.
Sure.
Right? Think about how just unbelievable he was in the regular season. But not only did he lose in the postseason, he lost bad.
And he lost to the same guy a bunch of times.
Right. Well, it was the Patriot defense directly.
Understood.
Right, but yeah,
you know what
up
I mean,
against
in terms of the
Brady,
marquee matchup.
Yeah, and at that point, I don't think that we thought Brady was as good a quarterback thrower of the ball as Peyton Manning was.
I don't.
The first couple of
maybe
Super
as a
Bowls.
Quarterback, he certainly was a better thrower. I mean, Manning never had a great arm. Manning
yeah,
had great
he
touch.
Was accurate, though.
Yeah, he had great touch.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was never as enamored with Peyton Manning as everyone else was.
Really? Never?
Not to say that. No, I never thought he was the greatest quarterback. I always would have taken Brady over him.
Even when Brady was just handing the ball off to Antoine Smith?
Well, yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Brady was never just handing the ball off to Antoine Smith.
Early in his career? Early in his career, you know what he was doing? He was doing more like Russell Wilson is now.
Sure.
Big running game, defense, and then making the throws when he has to. Good throws.
And he did it in the first Super Bowl that he played in. And, you know, I mean, there's always something to be said for that. I mean, the best quarterback I ever saw is still Joe Montana in the postseason because he just, I mean, he didn't have the greatest arm, but he threw the ball where it needed to be all the time. And it's just the feeling that you had if in the fourth quarter, does he have the ball? Who would you rather have the ball?
Fourth quarter, who, Peyton Manning or Joe Montana?
I mean, my opinion, not Peyton Manning, anyone even really comparing it to his contemporaries at the time. It was Joe Montana. Now, if you say the same thing about Peyton Manning and Tom Brady in their heyday, I don't know how you could pick Manning.
Not in that situation. Manning would get worse. I think Eli's better than him historically in that situation.
Eli's in an interesting place because he is a rise-to-the-occasion player.
Yeah.
Yet his legacy is taking a few hard hits now.
Like actual hard hits.
Yeah.
Like he's taking
like
every
like
couple
of plays.
Like
the hard hits he's taken.
Yeah.
Whereas Manning, and look, Manning took his career to a different level. When he did the year that he had with Denver, after coming back from a circumstance where, I mean, he was basically out for 2 years and didn't look like he could play, he added a chapter to his legend that is unique.
Yep. And he got the next Super Bowl. And again, he had some bad losses even there, but you're right.
The
record-setting offense.
The ironic thing in the next Super Bowl he got is that he wasn't good.
Right. He could barely throw the ball. He had nothing on it.
Yeah, he wasn't good at all, and his numbers weren't good, but he did get that second Super Bowl win.
Yeah. He set the table for that organization to get in that position.
Yes, he did.
Right. Had they not had him for the previous couple of years where they didn't make it to, or they did make it to the Super Bowl but lost,
that's a huge
that
add,
wouldn't have had.
That's
that
a
wouldn't
huge
happen.
Add to his legacy.
Yes.
A huge add to who he was, to overcome injury like that, to go to 2 Super Bowls and then, you know, obviously get crunched by the Seahawks and then rebound and take his team back to another one, speaks to him.
Could you say that the Seahawks helped cement his legacy, pushing him in that direction, or at least pushing Elway to get the right defense in there to help
him
win?
I mean, as it turned out, yes, but if that was his final memory, would have been that Seahawk game.
Oh.
And he had a record-setting offense, and to be completely outclassed like that, that would have really tarnished his legacy, I think.
Probably.
Because he's at a point now where you're just judging him by those games. You're already conceding what he can do in the regular season. He's done it. You're now at this point for some of those guys, and Brady is one of them, and Montana was one of them, and some of those quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers would be possibly one of them. He's got to get to some more Super Bowls.
Yes.
You're judged by what you do in the postseason.
Sure. As clutch as Rodgers has been in the regular season, and he's had good moments in the playoffs, but he hasn't even been to a second one yet.
He's also had bad moments in the playoffs.
Really bad ones.
Against your Giants, as a matter of fact.
15-1 team losing to a 9-7 team.
Right. I mean, it takes you to a different place sometimes when you can have that success in postseason, and that's why, you know, guys like Brady get elevated, and for good reason.
Yeah. Now, Russell Wilson is an interesting case. He's only been to 2 Super Bowls, played well in both of them, but he's also had other games in the postseason where he's played really well in the big moment. Just take the NFC Championship against the Packers.
Sure.
Right? Didn't play well. Now, tip passes, interceptions, okay, you can blame whoever you want there. But
he's too young to talk about legacy yet. His legacy is yet to be determined.
Year 7.
Yeah, it's on a positive right now, but you got to assume that he's halfway through his career. So what happens?
Injury free.
What happens in the second half of his career will go a long ways towards deciding what his legacy is. Because you know, you can say he had 2 good games, but he's remembered for 1 bad mistake in that second game. That's a Super Bowl memory of Russell Wilson right now. Is emphatically the interception.
Nationally, if you were to start ranking Russell Wilson moments, when you think the name Russell Wilson, what comes to mind? First, I just think I think a quarterback who's elusive. That's just me. If we're talking about moments.
I think nationally, the play against the Patriots.
The pick.
I mean, look, let's face it. I mean, they won that other Super Bowl over the Broncos. Was it 43-8?
Yeah, there's no.
He wasn't the MVP.
There's no Russell play from that game that I think of as being like a signature moment.
Nope. Signature moments took place in the NFC Championship Series. He's got some, so he's got a good legacy going, but right. it's too early to determine in his case. Whereas a guy like, you look at a guy like Rodgers, you say he's running out of time.
Yes.
You know, he's 35. He's got a few good years left, perhaps. I mean, the Packers this year, unless they're and the Packers in previous years have had big dramatic turnarounds, but his postseason legacy is lacking at this point.
Yeah, he's got to get back. I mean, he's at least got to get to another one. And you know what? He's got to probably play well in it. Even if they don't lose.
To really cement that, you know, he's a great regular season quarterback, one of the greatest. And he'll certainly have all that. Like Dan Marino was one of the greatest, too, and he had 1 Super Bowl.
Only got to one, didn't even win it.
No, he didn't, and spent a lot of years not going to the playoffs. So that legacy is safe. But if you want to be at that ultimate level, you got to have the postseason chops as well.
By the way, you talk about final performances. Dan Marino had the single worst final game ever. You remember what it was? It was the 62-7 loss to Jacksonville in like the division round in like 99. They went in there. He got picked off left and right. I don't think he had completed a pass the whole first half.
Wow.
It was brutal. It was the worst exit that any respectable quarterback could ever ask for. It was just terrible. Guess what, Graz? We actually heard from Roger Goodell.
What?
He finally surfaced.
About Paul Allen?
Sort of. We'll talk about it next in the halftime show.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over.
Presented by VenueKings.com.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Bob, Roz, and Tom.
It's a Halftime Show on Bob, Roz, and Tom.
Jay Keeps coming up in half an hour, by the way.
Yeah, I'll be talking to him about a couple of things. Washington State, the Huskies, and the Seahawks.
Washington Wednesday at 2:30 with the voice of the Colorado Buffs.
He lives up in the mountains, he told me.
Is that right?
He gave me a special line because he says where he is. It's classic. It's textbook Colorado. Like, we can't get him on a cell phone.
You ever been there?
I've only been to the airport twice.
Okay.
That's it.
Boulder's a beautiful spot.
I can imagine. That's what I hear.
Right up against the Rocky Mountains. Stadium, just gorgeous.
When you're at the airport and you look out, like if you're depending on which terminal you're at, probably all of them, It's just flat. And when I say flat, well, I mean it's level. And then it's mountains off in the distance.
Yeah, you're looking. If you look east, it stays flat.
Yeah.
If you look west, there's these giant, jagged peaks.
Big mountains.
Big ones. So that's all coming up in the next hour. Bob Grosenthal.
We've talked a lot about scandal in baseball. I guess we can start there with the Astros.
Noise.
Yeah.
A little something-something.
If it were during the regular season, I'd say, just what the heck. We're not going to even broach this. But when you have a little bit of added intrigue, something else going on the side in the playoffs, I think that's it adds a little bit of excitement. But as it turns out, I'm not sure that it really is anything.
No, it's not. I mean, what the Astros were accused of yesterday was having they did. An employee in the photo booth basically shooting video in the Red Sox dugout. Now, the reason why he was doing it was the question. It's the reason why it's not a big story today is they weren't doing it to gain an advantage. They were doing it to try and see what the Red Sox were doing to gain an advantage. And baseball's already spoken on it. There's not going to be any ramifications for it.
Right. Jason
you got
Stark,
the statement right there.
Yeah, Jason Stark just tweeted out here, with respect to both incidents regarding a Houston Astros employee, security identified an issue, addressed it, and turned the matter over to the Department of Investigations. A thorough investigation concluded that an Astros employee was monitoring the field to ensure the opposing club was not violating any rules. That's basically what you just said there. All clubs remaining in the playoffs have been notified to refrain from these types of efforts and to direct complaints about any in-stadium rules violations to MLB staff for further investigation and resolution. We consider the matter closed. So basically,
that part of it is closed. Whether or not the Red Sox are doing anything untoward is probably still open.
Right, but if you're thinking about spying on them to make sure they're not cheating,
stop.
Don't do that either.
Well, don't do it with video equipment, for sure.
Right, essentially, don't get caught doing this.
Basically, that's what they're saying. And half an hour away from Game 5, critical Game 5 of the Dodgers and Brewers series, and that doesn't seem to happen a lot in baseball. You have a long extra-inning night game and you play a day game the next day.
Yeah, that is kind of weird.
That having been said, that was a long, long game. I mean, as David Schoenfeld pointed out when he was with us about a half an hour ago, he had a 1-1 game that took almost 4 hours to play nine innings.
Yeah, if there's a little back and forth, it's 5-4, you score in the top, you respond on the bottom, maybe that's one thing. It was just strikeout after strikeout after strikeout.
Yep, and it went 13 innings. You had Manny Machado with his little cheap shot that got the Brewers up in arms a little bit. So you got a little bit of noise in both series a little bit. You got a little bit of added extra, and you got drama, like I said, in a Game 5 in the series tonight for the Astros and the Dodgers, and Clayton Kershaw pitching.
Yeah.
His legacy, not on the line, but certainly part of it is.
Yeah.
And the Astros and Red Sox are due for a classic game.
Yeah, they keep having these games that are close for a while, and then it gets away from somebody late in the game,
right? They're due for a classic.
Yeah. Look, if you're the Dodgers, you're happy to have your ace on the mound here. I mean, because knowing that you have to go back to Milwaukee to win this thing, getting tonight's win is going to be huge if indeed they can get it.
I got to ask a question off topic about the eavesdrop today.
We don't have an eavesdrop.
Oh, it's right. Well, we got to find the Bill Belichick quote. Did you see? Let's go to item number two here, Curtis. Because did you see Bill Belichick actually animated quote?
No.
Patriots are playing the Bears this week.
Okay.
And the question was asked of Belichick. So it was Khalil Mack in LT's category.
Oh, I saw the quote.
And he emphatically denied it.
There, you've heard audio of this?
No, I haven't. I'm curious if, because Belichick is normally, but it was definitely his weekly deal.
Yeah,
it's Wednesday, so we'll see if we can find it. But he was, I wonder, I don't know if this is, you know, you hear the phrase bulletin board material a lot, and I don't know if this is that. I mean, does Khalil Mack compare himself to Lawrence Taylor?
I don't know if he does, but if somebody.
I'll be curious to see what his reaction to it is.
Yeah, if somebody compared me to the greatest radio host of all time and then somebody stepped in and said, no, Tom is not that, I don't think I'd be insulted.
Right.
Right?
So I don't think Khalil Mack is insulted, but who knows?
You're no Lawrence Taylor. Well, nobody is.
Who is? Which is sort of Belichick's point, but it was surprising to hear him or see him be a little animated about that, in particular when that's who they're playing this week.
If somebody said to Khalil Mack, you're no Von Miller...
Different story.
Right, because
I'm not going to speak for Khalil Mack. He may be completely offended by this. He might be Lawrence Taylor, not as big, as strong as I am, not as quick as I am. He was good in his era, but he couldn't play in this era. He could. I don't know him well enough to know what his reaction is.
Maybe he would. Maybe he wouldn't. But I mean, when you're talking about a player that changed the way offenses prepare.
Oh no! I mean, he's not as impactful. You'll have to convince me.
I'm convincing Khalil Mack, in case he's listening right now, that he probably shouldn't be too worried about that.
But actually, seeing Belichick animated, and of course, keep in mind Belichick coached Lawrence Taylor.
Right.
So he was on the sidelines with him when he was a young coach. So it's a personal matter for him as well.
We keep talking about bigger, faster, stronger every 10 years. Guys, are I think Lawrence Taylor could hang today?
He could hang, but I don't think he'd have the same impact today.
Like, he could be in the league and be a
player. Oh, he'd be a star. He'd be a star player.
He'd still be fast. I mean, he was a fast player.
He'd be a star player.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't, I mean, he wouldn't be as impactful now because when he came along, there was nothing like him.
How about just the rules?
Yeah.
Would he be allowed to...
That's another good point.
...to pound Jaworski through the carpet?
Nope.
Definitely not. All right, last one here real quick.
You keep looking at your phone.
Yeah, because I got these odds that were of interest to me in my email.
Our friend Jimmy from Bovada, yeah.
Yeah. Do you like the Seahawks at 66-1 to win the Super Bowl? The only reason I'm bringing it up, I'm going to Vegas in 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And so I'm looking at just a bunch of different odds here. To win the Super Bowl, to win the conference, etc. I kind of like 66-1. It was 80.
Yeah, so those are good odds.
I mean, the Seahawks are better right now than I thought they were 4 weeks ago. A lot better.
Well, you might feel differently in 2 weeks.
Right. Maybe, let's see. Just how about just to win the conference? 40-1.
To beat the Rams in L.A. from the championship game.
But they're going to get knocked out from the divisional round by the Eagles.
I think the Rams are a pretty overwhelming favorite, aren't they?
The Rams
at this point?
Are 8-5 to win the conference. I don't like that.
Well, I mean, it's too short for now, and it's based on what you're seeing now. So those odds will change as time goes on, but that's a nice price in the Seahawks.
Yeah, double-digit odds the first couple are Minnesota 13-2, which really isn't double-digit odds. Bears 12-1, Packers 12-1.
I don't see that, man.
Panthers 18.
You know, I got a great bet in on the Seahawks the year they won the championship.
What was it?
10-1.
10-1 going in.
And then I was in Vegas, and then they had signed Percy Harvin 2 days later, which dropped the odds.
Oh.
I mean, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got 10-1 on the Seahawks to win the Super Bowl the year they won it.
That sounds about right. Coming off 2012, losing the division round.
Yeah, they were like third or fourth choice.
Right. Not a runaway favorite.
No, but they were you know, third or fourth.
Huh. Yeah, if I can get... I'm just looking at the NFC
it's
here.
It's worth $10, man.
Yeah, it's worth $10. I'm thinking about laying down like a C note, though.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I'd do that, but that'd be a nice payoff.
When you go to Vegas, you got to be willing to lose something.
Sure.
I'm not a big card player.
You can't bet if you don't win.
Right. But aside from the Rams, I can't think of one team I think might actually win the conference. I don't know. Maybe we can explore that more later. Text us your question, 710-710 to the Coors Light text line. Have an opinion already is next.
You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
This is Have an Opinion Already on the Bob Gross and Tom Show. Three loudmouths, three questions, and one giant tub of hand sanitizer. Right, Bob? Let's get it on.
Let's get it on, baby. This
is me. Nope. Try again.
Let's get it on.
Question one.
Couple people calling you out, Cruz. You said you can't bet if you don't win.
Oh, I meant you can't win if you don't bet.
Can't win if you don't bet.
Sorry about that.
Or as they used to say back in Connecticut on the Connecticut State Lottery commercial.
Can't win if you don't play?
You can't win, you don't play.
Yep, that's a lottery line.
I had a t-shirt to prove it. remember before we were going around, we were deciding if we would take any Mariners over current Astros, position by position there?
A couple.
Yeah, a couple. There's a few others worth looking at, though.
Okay.
Haniger versus Josh Reddick.
Okay.
I'd take Haniger there, both defensively and offensively. Segura over Correa?
Not if Correa's in full health. I'm taking Correa. Although I'll concede it's not a blowout.
If I just need a single... I'll take Segura. If I'm just looking to line up my team for the entire series, I think I might take Correa there. What do you think, Curtis?
I'm taking Carlos Correa.
Correa, yeah. Okay. Where is Russell Wilson's dynamic scramble game been so far this season? Well, he hasn't really needed it.
That's where it's been. It's been unnecessary.
It's safely stored in mothballs for now.
Right. And look, it was always going to be the way that as he went on in his career, he's gotten a little bulkier. He's doing a little bit of run. He did a little bit of run option last week, but the scramble game was done out of necessity, not out of design for the most part. He's got an offensive line that's protecting him. I mean, aren't you happy with the results?
Oh, God, yes. And by the way, in the first couple of weeks, he was running. I mean, not running like he was years ago, but his escapability, he tried.
It'd be one thing if you weren't getting results, but you're getting results.
Yeah. You mentioned that...
Question two.
That Belichick comment about Khalil Mack and Lawrence Taylor. Yeah. This thing could walk up, and it just disappeared. Curtis, would you mind pulling that up? I'll do another question here first. Would you rather have multiple championships but be hated by posterity or beloved with no championships? So you're Belichick or you're Edgar?
Yeah, I guess it's a good comparison. I'd rather have the multiple championships, I guess.
Of course. I mean, Edgar doesn't ever have to pay for a meal in this town, but, you know, championships.
Belichick's not paying for many meals in New England.
This
Boston,
is true.
By the way.
He may have to pay in other towns.
He may.
As would Edgar.
Well, maybe. I like Edgar, though. Russell Wilson's got a quarterback rating this year of 104.8. 13 touchdowns, 4 picks. Mm. Not missing a scramble game.
No. Truth. You know what? If you miss it, it's only because you just miss watching him run around.
Right.
Aesthetically. Not because it's hurting the team. All right, you got that Belichick bite?
Bill, you've seen a lot of good pass rushers in your career, starting with Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White. Does Mac sort of rank up there with one of the better ones you've seen?
Oh, I mean, we're talking about Lawrence Taylor now. Yeah. I'm not putting anybody in Lawrence Taylor's class. So you put everybody down below that. That's with a lot of respect to a lot of good players now, but we're talking about Lawrence Taylor.
That's pretty emphatic.
That is animated as we've ever heard Belichick. He actually, you know,
it's not really a shot on Mac. He said that he didn't put anyone in the Lawrence Taylor class.
Nor would I expect him to. What's interesting is usually that type of question, Groz, he won't even answer. He'll just shrug.
Right.
Kind of breathe heavy.
He felt like answering that one, though.
Yeah, he wanted to go on record with that one.
Yes. And didn't mention Mac by name, just said the only guy he mentioned by name was Lawrence Taylor.
Who's the second best pass rusher of all time?
Deacon Jones.
I thought you might say one of the Rams.
Did you? But not that. One of the fearsome foursome?
I had Merlin Olsen in my head, even though I wouldn't put him second. His name just popped into my head.
I thought they went back because the sacks weren't an official stat that time. I thought someone went back and did one of his seasons, and he had like 29 or
right.
something like that.
Didn't they become sacks? No, they didn't become sacks until like 81.
They didn't become a stat until the 80s.
I think Lawrence Taylor's rookie year.
Is that right?
Actually, I think it was 82, because Lawrence Taylor, he has 1 year where they're not accounted for. So I think, I'm pretty sure it was in 82.
Okay.
But you're right about the Deacon Jones thing. I've heard that. Somebody went back and tracked it, and he just has an ungodly amount of sacks.
Yeah, right.
What about Reggie White?
Reggie White was great at it. He was a great DT.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of guys who were specializing in sacks.
I mean, there were in the 90s, there were a lot of guys who were about the same ability. I'm not sure if there was... Was there one guy that really was just a one-man wrecking crew? Maybe we can go back and look through
here.
Look
it up.
Biscuits and gravy or eggs and hash browns? Eggs and hash browns every time.
Although biscuits and gravy are good if they're done right.
If they're done right.
If they're done right.
If you've got hot gravy. The second that gravy starts to get cold, I'm not sure I want to be eating that at all. Oh, here they come. Derek Thomas, Bruce Smith, Charles Haley, Michael Strahan.
Derek Thomas, definitely.
Chiefs.
He had that amazing Seahawk game.
Yes.
Sacked Dave Craig 7 times and missed him the last time, and Craig threw a touchdown pass, too. Curtis, you know?
I don't.
Was it... Wait, it was Craig... Okay, yeah, so 90... Was it Larson?
Nope.
Who?
I believe it was Paul Johns. I'm not certain on that. Curtis will look it up for me.
Derek Brooks, Simeon Rice, Jason Taylor. Yeah, I don't know if I'd put Jason Taylor like top five all time, but these are good. This kind of proves my point. Is
Chris Dolman.
You had a lot of guys who were playing at about that level.
So I'm looking at something here. It says Coy Bacon, one of the great names of all time, another Ram. recorded 26, 22, and 21 and a half sacks in 1976, depending on who you believe. Al Bubba Baker, Lions defensive end, had 23 or 21 and a half, again, depending on who you believe, is a rookie in 78.
It was Paul Skansky.
Paul Skansky, that's right. I'm sorry.
Everybody's texting that in now.
Paul Skansky.
Yeah, John Randall, he'd be another one. Small guy.
Former Seahawk.
Randall played here, too?
Yeah, it was one of Mike Holmgren's first picks.
Went to a Pro Bowl here.
No kidding. Daryl Tapp, yeah. The Bills had a lot of those guys. I wouldn't put Sapp on there. Javon Kearse, yeah, tons of them.
We said Bruce Smith, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you go to any Super Bowl in the 90s, just look at the defensive roster, you're going to pull one or two guys out of there. I mean, Charles Haley did it with two different teams.
Kevin Green,
he's a Hall of Famer now.
Third all time.
Yep.
Julius Peppers is on that list.
He's had a long, long career.
Yeah, he has.
Urlacher?
No, I don't see Urlacher on there. Looking at the top, looking at active players on the list. Peppers is fourth. Terrell Suggs is 15th.
Oh, Ray Lewis.
He'd
have to be way up there.
No, not in the top 15. Not in the top 20.
You're just looking at sack numbers.
Yeah, that's all you ask,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
NFL career sack.
I'm just talking generally about great pass rushers, but yeah, the question was about sacks, sure. All right, we're going to talk to Jake Heaps next. It's our weekly visit with him, talking Cougs, talking Huskies, and of course Seahawks. I'm Bob Grosentom.